Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, I have a conversation with the chairman of our Republican Party, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And Steve, how you doing this week?
Doing great. I am freezing in a frigid New Mexico.
Yes.
If Hobbs is cold, every place is cold.
That's true, because it's usually warmer down there than it is up here in Rio Rancho where I am. I want to get your thoughts on this. You see these things happening. We talk about these things on the radio, but real life affects people more than anything we can say on radio or television. And NBC, of all networks, NBC did a poll that said 71% of Americans think the country is going in the wrong direction. So are people finally getting what we've been saying for all this time?
When it starts hurting bad enough, people start paying attention. So exactly what does 71% mean? That means if you got four people in a room, three of them are going to agree we're headed the wrong direction. Only one out of four. And then you can do those numbers bigger, that if you got 100 million people, you got 71 million of those people saying we're headed the wrong direction. That's what 71% means. People just see it. They see the unfairness. They see the effect on their paycheck. They see the border. They see people just being allowed to come into the country and start accessing benefits. They see the way that we got out of Afghanistan and left soldiers there to fend for themselves, left Americans there to fend for themselves. And so you just have this panoply of problems playing out, and people are beginning to say, hey, this is wrong. We're headed the wrong direction.
I want to know where the people that think we're heading the right direction live, because I can't imagine where that is.
Well, a lot of them are not in touch with reality at all. So let's keep in mind, who are the 25% that believe we're going okay? And then we'll talk about the ones who don't think we're headed the right way. But you remember the Project Veritas, that's the one where they go in with the journalist and record secretly. Well, Matt Staver has got an article that he sent out just recently, and he's talking about Dalia Don, the founder of the Veritas Project, going in and secretly undercover videoing one of the heads of Pfizer, and is one of the top vice presidents. Anyway, the person is sitting there saying, oh yeah, we think we're going to make a lot of money in developing these diseases that people have to take vaccines to cure. Now, that is a curious statement, but it's where the 25% live. It's this idea that we can manipulate everything that causes people to say we're headed the wrong direction, but the 25% who are manipulating think it's okay. And if you take a look at the Pfizer stock, you'll see why that the Pfizer upper echelon is so excited about it. For 10 years, the last 10 years, Pfizer was in what was classified as dead money stock. That means there's no growth, no increased revenues. It was just static. And so this is a place to park money, but there was no excitement about it. Then Corona happened in 2020. Somehow that virus that nobody knew anything about, the COVID-19, suddenly Pfizer had the first vaccine that went to market, and they were able to sell hundreds of millions of these doses of vaccine because the U.S. government was buying them. As a result, Pfizer has increased its bottom line, its net value, by $126.83 billion since 2021. What has happened to their stock? It's gone up 62%. So this dead money stock for 10 years suddenly went up by 62%. And in the 100 years of tracking these kind of corporate values, never has this ever occurred. And it occurs because they magically knew that COVID-19 might be something that might be coming along. And then when Dalia Don, when Veritas videos this guy secretly talking about, oh yeah, we're making this and we're making that, it has given a rise to the suspicion that actually Pfizer is putting their, not just the thumb on the scale, they're sitting on the scale, developing these diseases to where people need vaccines. And that's the 25%. They're the ones who think they're so smart that they can tell the rest of us how to live. The 71% are saying, no way, I'm tired of it. And I want my freedom. I don't want corporations manufacturing viruses to where I have to get a shot to clear it. I don't want people making false profits, false revenues. But that's the 29%. The 71% are definitely on the side of freedom.
Dave Rubin, of the Rubin Report also says that being a progressive just isn't working for him. He has a report that we're going to play for our listeners, but give us some insight.
Sure. Prager University, if you're not familiar with it, is P-R-A-G-E-R, Prager U. Just Google it and you can get these 5-minute videos which describe different political things in the world. A lot of people who formerly aligned with the left are leaving them because they say the left, the progressive Democrats, are no longer a progressive party. They're the regressive party. That's exactly what Dave Rubin says in this video. But I want you to listen to why one insider of the left, a former progressive, said, I'm no longer progressive, and get your friends to listen to this. I think you'll find it very instructive.
Do you believe in free speech? Do you believe that people should be judged by their character, not their skin color? Do you believe in freedom of religion? If you believe these things, you're probably not a progressive. You might think you're a progressive. I used to think I was. My show, The Rubin Report, was originally part of the Progressive Young Turks Network. Progressives struck me as liberals, but louder. Progressives were the nice guys. They looked out for the little guy. They cared about women and minorities. They embraced change. In short, who wouldn't want to be a progressive? But over the last couple of years, the meaning of the word progressive has changed. Progressives used to say, I may disagree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. Not anymore. Banning speakers whose opinions you don't agree with from college campuses, that's not progressive. Prohibiting any words not approved of as politically correct, that's not progressive. Putting trigger warnings on books, movies, music, anything that might offend people, that's not progressive either. All of this has led me to believe that much of the left is no longer progressive, but regressive. This is one of the reasons I've spent so much time on my show talking about the regressive left. This regressive ideology doesn't judge people as individuals, but as a collective. If you're black or female or Muslim or Hispanic or member of any other minority group, you're judged differently than the most evil of all things, a white Christian male. The regressive left ranks minority groups in a pecking order to compete in a kind of oppression Olympics. Gold medal goes to the most offended. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream that his children would be judged by their character and not their skin color was a liberal idea, but these days it's not a progressive ideal. And what about religious freedom, the idea that no one else can tell you what you have to believe? Surely progressives still support that basic right. Well, not so much. I'm a married gay man, so you might think that I appreciate the government forcing a Christian baker or photographer or florist to act against their religion in order to cater, photograph, or decorate my wedding. But you'd be wrong. A government that can force Christians to violate their conscience can force me to violate mine. If a baker won't bake you a cake, find another baker. Don't demand that the state tell him what to do with his private business. I'm pro-choice, but a government that can force a group of Catholic nuns, literally called the Little Sisters of the Poor, to violate their faith and pay for abortion-inducing birth control, can force anyone to do anything. That's not progressive, that's regressive. Today's progressivism has become a faux moral movement hurling charges of racism, bigotry, xenophobia, homophobia, Islamophobia, and a slew of other meaningless buzzwords at anyone they disagree with. The battle of ideas has been replaced by a battle of feelings, and outrage has replaced honesty. Diversity reigns supreme as long as it's not that pesky diversity of thought. This isn't the recipe for a free society, it's a recipe for authoritarianism. For these reasons, I can no longer call myself a progressive. I don't really call myself a Democrat either. I'm a classical liberal, a free thinker, and as much as I don't like to admit it, defending my liberal values has suddenly become a conservative position. So if you think people should be able to say what they think without being punished for it, that people should be judged by their behavior, not their skin color, and that people should be able to live the way that they want to live without government interference, then there's not much left on the left for you. I'll keep trying to explain that to progressives until I'm totally left out. I'm Dave Rubin of The Rubin Report for Prager University.
Democrats accuse Republicans of wanting to defund Social Security and Medicare by not raising the debt ceiling. I will ask Steve Pierce about that in our next segment on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico as I continue my conversation with the chairman of our Republican Party, Steve Pearce. Steve, we see this every time the debate on the debt limit comes up. We just received a press release from Nancy Pelosi, or at least that's what it says. Okay, maybe. But the release says, MSNBC just warned that House Republicans are planning to use their new majority to threaten our Social Security and Medicare. They've made it clear they'll put their far-right agenda over our families every time. We can't let them get away with it. And then she has this plan, but what it comes down to after you read this whole plan is, will you chip in $15 to help us take back the House? They just lost the House now, and they don't get why, apparently.
Yeah, so what she's talking about is the whole discussion on the debt limit. You remember in December, we were pretty critical of Mitch McConnell in the Senate for allowing that debt limit to be increased by trillions of dollars without really a fight. And what Republicans are saying is that if we spend a dollar, we need to save a dollar. In this debt limit discussion, that's what the whole thing of the 15 votes on the floor of the House was before Kevin McCarthy would become speaker, is that people were insisting that we, in the debt limit, get spending cuts along with the spending increases, that we don't actually increase the debt limit very much at all. I was in D.C., a part of the House, when we shut down for 17 days, and it was over this issue. We shut the government down. No Social Security recipient lost their money. Nobody in welfare lost the money. Certain checks go out on time, no matter what the status of the government is, and that's one of them. I think defense is included in that. No bases shut down. It's not like the government comes to a stop. Now, Congress shut down during that 17 days, but I kept my office in. All of the staff showed up every day. We did our work as normal. I donated my pay back to the government because I felt like that if everybody else was suffering, that we in Congress should suffer. I was one of the few who was actually running a full staff, and we were continuing with our constituent service. Everything was moving normally in our office, but that's what you're going to hear over the next weeks as this whole issue of the debt limit comes up. And Joe Biden is sitting over in the White House saying that the people be damned, that he doesn't have to negotiate with anybody, and he's going to insist that the debt ceiling go up to what he wants it to. Already under him, I think the debt ceiling has been increased over $10 trillion, maybe even more. We could get that actual number, but the entire economy of the U.S. is being risked by this debt. The amount of money that we're paying for debt service, in other words, the government has to pay on its loans, just like you. If you borrow money for your house, then you have to pay a certain amount on interest. Well, the U.S. government has to pay that too. We're already paying over $400 billion a year in debt service. And so Joe Biden says that we're going to drive it higher. By the way, the debt is now larger than our economy. Always under, all the way through President Bush, through President Obama, the debt was actually less than our economy. So you could make the case that, okay, it's salvageable. Our economy is about roughly $15 to $18 trillion. Our debt now is in the $31 trillion range, and that should be frightening people. Just when you get over your head in your personal home, when your debt is more than your income, you have to worry about it. Our government also should be worrying about it. So a huge fight coming up on Capitol Hill. And again, the reforms that were gotten by the Freedom Caucus holding out on that speaker vote, 15 different votes, eventually brought Kevin McCarthy to the table. And he said, okay, I'm with you on the debt ceiling. So I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but the U.S. must start worrying about how much money we owe. If we don't worry about it, we're eventually just going to have to devalue the dollar. That means if you got $50,000 in your savings account today, that it would be worth $25,000 next year if they devalue the currency. So huge problems lying ahead for America if we continue to borrow money with unrestricted fashion. That's what Joe Biden wants. Republicans are fighting against that.
Just to be clear, you know of no Republican that is for getting rid of Social Security or Medicare. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've never seen anyone vote for that in Washington. That's simply a scare story. I think that's the 71% of Americans are not going to be believing that. That 71% is distrustful of the left. They're distrustful of Nancy Pelosi. That's the reason she was booted out as Speaker of the House. And so, no, I don't think any Republican is voting to get rid of Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid.
All right. Sanctuary cities for the unborn. Eunice, New Mexico, last week voted to become one. What are your thoughts on that?
When Texas put its very strenuous ban on abortions, then those abortions began to move across the state line into New Mexico. New Mexico, of course, is the late-term abortion capital of the country, and so Planned Parenthood is trying to establish abortion centers in many of the counties and cities across this state, and so different counties and different cities are protesting passing these resolutions, which say they do not want to be a host for abortion centers in their community. And so I totally support that. I think we should be standing up for life and for the rights of the unborn. The value of a society, any society, is really based on its willingness to speak for those with the least voice. I can guarantee you the people with the least voice in this nation are the unborn. And so we should be speaking up for them, defending them. New Mexico is in the process of passing a bill which would allow abortions up to and including the day of birth. They've been doing it. They just haven't made it legal. So shame on the state that tries to encourage abortions. Yes, I support the move for sanctuary cities.
Now, we have sanctuary cities in New Mexico for illegal aliens, but yet they want to pass a bill that says Eunice and the other cities that have set up sanctuary cities for the unborn is not legal. Haven't they set a precedent by allowing sanctuary cities for one thing? How can they not allow another?
Yeah, that's a great point that you're making, Derek, and I hope that people are listening to that, because if you can have a safe haven as an adult who comes here or as a child that comes here illegally, surely we should have safe havens for the unborn.
I'm talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Coming up in our next segment, we'll answer a question from a listener on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. The Republican Party of New Mexico hosts this program we're doing on their Facebook page, Inside New Mexico. You go there and there's a link and you can click on it and you can listen to the program if you came in the middle or want to hear previous programs. And sometimes Facebook fans will post comments. And so somebody posted a comment that says, and I quote, "Mr. Pierce, please address the RPNM support of GOP candidate Pena during his run for office. Thank you."
It's become a nationwide news story. Obviously, Solomon Pena was running in the South Valley of Albuquerque. So there are several pieces of this to discuss. First of all, the Democrats tried to have Mr. Pena removed from the ballot, saying that he was convicted felon, and a New Mexico judge in September of this last year said no, that keeping him off the ballot is now not in compliance with, I guess, state law. Even right now, the Democrats are trying to make it even more possible for felons to vote. And I think that the judge's ruling was if a felon can vote, then they can participate everywhere in the process. And running for office is just one step removed from voting. And so that was the judge's ruling, not RPNM. The idea that RPNM went out and recruited this candidate in order for him to do what he did is preposterous. But I will tell you that the Republican Party as a whole is the party of faith. We're the party that says that we have values that align with a creator, and typically people in our party are members of some faith group. And faith is all about giving people second chances. And so you have the law merging with our typical values. We're sympathetic to the fact that people can change their lives. There are lots of stories out there of people doing that. the fact that Mr. Pena, who had really received strong positive reviews for his work in the South Valley, I think that's the reason that the Democrats came after him. They wanted him off the ballot. They were afraid of him. And again, a third piece of the story has to be that in America, until you're convicted, you're assumed to be innocent. Now, the press has forgotten that. And when I look nationwide, they've all convicted Mr. Pena. We remember all of the federal agents showing up at President Trump's house. And so you have that illusion. And now then it looks like that he did far less than what Joe Biden did. And so we didn't see all of those armed FBI agents with their SWAT gear on showing up at Joe Biden's house and looking in the trunk of his Corvette. So you get a lot of moving pieces in the story here. But the Republican Party has always said that we abhor violence. If Mr. Pena is guilty, then he should suffer the consequences of the law. But you know, with all the nationwide stories, I didn't see one of the people who are writing stories today attack in the same fashion. When the gunman came out to the baseball field and began to shoot at us, the congressman, I was there that day. I was up at bat when he first walked up to the third base dugout. By the time he started shooting, I had walked over to the first base dugout, had completed my time at bat, had taken my swings. But for over 10 minutes, he fired approximately 100 shots from a high-powered rifle. And I don't see the same condemnation going on nationwide that I see on Mr. Pena. Yeah, if Mr. Pena is guilty, that's one thing, but it's still speculative. But the shooter, that was not speculative at all. The police came and killed him in the act. I was sitting there about 10 feet from the policeman that fired the first fatal shot. There were two shots involved, but he fired the first. He was actually asking me to point to where exactly the gunman was. And so very closely aligned with that. But the ability of Democrats to change the narrative is amazing. So when the FBI actually issued its report, it wasn't that that gunman was out to kill Republicans. The FBI official report initially stated that he was intent on suicide by police shooting, that he showed up there in order to be killed by the police, and the Republicans just happened to be innocent bystanders that were somehow caught up in it. He had the names of Republican congressmen written on a sheet in his book. When he was approaching the field, he asked people, is this where the Republicans are all gathered out here? So all of the evidence said he came to shoot Republicans, and yet the highest law enforcement agency in the country, the FBI, initial report declared that he wasn't there to kill Republicans at all. He was there to get self-inflicted gunshot wound from the police that would end his life. The outcry from people who are on the field that day really is the only thing that caused them to change their story. But that's kind of the thing that we're dealing with in the country today. Solomon Pena is a serious problem, but so are the people who spray painted threats on the RPNM building in Albuquerque. Yet I didn't see as much response in the newspapers and on the social media about that. When people begin to spray paint threats, that's a lot of times a predecessor to more serious actions. We had people who confront and actually push and shove Republicans over their beliefs, and you don't see anything about that. Last year, we had a Republican somewhere in the nation who was knocking doors and was shot and killed because they were pro-life and knocking doors trying to get people to sign a petition or vote for Republican pro-life candidates. And so none of that makes the news. So you can see that what's going on, I think, nationally is just this attempt to create one more big news stories to tell how evil Republicans are. I don't agree with it and haven't really participated in a lot of the interviews where I can see the type of articles they're writing. So we've been steadfast in waiting for the law to run its course to see if Mr. Pena is guilty or not. If he is, then I expect that he'll get the judgment that he deserves. If he's innocent, maybe some of these news stories would actually write retractions. I would doubt it, but you can always hope.
Yeah. And one last thing. So of the Republican Party's endorsement of a candidate, Mr. Pena was allowed to run by the New Mexico Secretary of State, Maggie Toulouse Oliver. She didn't find any reason that he couldn't run. So why would the Republican Party of New Mexico not support him?
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, the state law of New Mexico is right now being discussed to make it even more permissive for felons and former felons to participate in the voting process and literally in serving. So we'll see where this case ends up.
Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation is filing a lawsuit against the city of Albuquerque for donating $250,000 to Planned Parenthood.
First of all, you have to understand Planned Parenthood is a corporation. So should they be supporting corporations? Forget the political element of it for a moment. And it's risky ground when they start taking taxpayer money and paying for any purpose. But then when you're taking taxpayer money from taxpayers who would be opposed to the abortion process, and they're using that taxpayer money to fund something that the taxpayer themselves would be opposed to, that is a very tricky ground. And I suspect that Mr. Gesing is going to get a good read from the New Mexico Supreme Court. They've actually been very good on governance issues. So we'll watch that. But no, the government should not be using taxpayer money to fund corporations of any kind.
And that opens up a can of worms, because you could say, well, then they should fund my corporation. Why don't they give me money?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that's the reason that you ought to not be funding anything. But I'm sure the mayor of Albuquerque is trying to make a big political statement. And he has, in fact, done that. New Mexico is the late-term abortion capital of the country. When the nation was in an uproar over Virginia and New York and their proposals to go to late-term abortions, we had been doing that for years, and the aborted baby parts are being sold around the nation. That's against the law. They're being used for research for even high school students at UNM coming into summer camps and using aborted fetuses to do dissections and things on. It's just horrid, the things that are going on, and yet it all goes under the radar, and nobody was knowing when they were protesting New York and Virginia. They didn't know that New Mexico had been doing this for over a decade.
I've been talking with the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. If you would like to find out more about the Republican Party of New Mexico, they have a website. Check it out, newmexico.gop. They have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. If you would like to speak to somebody in person, call party headquarters in Albuquerque at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill, and we look forward to meeting with you again at this time next week on Inside New Mexico.